straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
We are back after a one-month hiatus on Second Thought, episode 121, brought to you by our friends at Bud Light, powered by Hook'em.com. I'm Cedric Golden, along with the Duck, Kirk Bowles. We are back from the Big Easy, and guess who brought back a Sugar Bowl championship? Your Texas Longhorns.
Yes, they did, in unequivocal beatdown fashion.
No, well, hold on, dog.
What?
Georgia didn't want to be there, remember?
No, they did.
No, they didn't.
Here's the thing. They wanted to be that. They would have preferred, you know, being in the Cotton Bowl or the Orange Bowl, but, and their coach, Kirby Smart, said they were out to make a statement. He said that the day before.
And they did.
Texas was a lot better than them. So I don't think it's so much Georgia not wanting to be there as much as it was Georgia was smug and cocky and overconfident because they're thinking this piddly little Big 12 runner-up team. I mean,
four losses.
Yeah, we almost beat Alabama, you know, four losses. How good could they be? Well, as they showed, real good. And that was as impressive a win by Texas since the 2004-05 season, I think.
And, Duck, remember we're in New Orleans, we're at the Superdome, and they're doing the coin toss, and they got all the pageantry. And you look up, and Elijah Holyfield, the Georgia running back, is staring daggers at Chris Nelson.
Oh, yeah, you and I talked about it.
Trying to intimidate Chris Nelson, who is not a punk. Chris Nelson is a tough, he's a sweet dude, but he's a tough guy.
Yes, he is.
And he just kind of looked back like, dude, I'm from Texas.
Yeah. We've been in big games before.
I'm from Texas. This is not a big deal to me. And so Chris Nelson gets in there and makes a stop early in that game, tackles Holyfield. And you look up and you're like, and then Texas goes down there and drives it in and scores. And you're like, this is not what some people thought would happen. And
including
the Longhorns, including us. I thought that they were going to lose by 10 points.
Right.
I had them losing, I think it was 34-24. I didn't think that they would be able to handle those running backs like they did. And I just did not think that Sam Ehlinger would be that great at prime time. He went back to the Sam Ehlinger from Texas OU 1.
You got to give Texas their due. I mean, they dominated that game start to finish. And even though they scored on their first drive, and I know people that hate them deferring, I don't mind them deferring. Especially if you're going to get the ball at the end of the one half and the start of the next one, I think it makes good coaching philosophical sense. But for them to take the ball and just ram it right down Georgia's neck, that was impressive. And then, you know, they got a couple of turnovers. The Georgia punter who went down on a knee to give the ball the ball at the Georgia 27. So they just took over that game from start to finish. Well, start to nearly finish. I think Tom Herman was probably a little worried about their characteristic fourth quarter meltdowns, but for three and a half quarters, I think Texas could have beaten anybody on that day
the way they were playing. And yeah, I know it turned out to be a great week for teams from Texas. We're going to talk to Dallas Cowboys voice Brad Sham in our next segment, but let's talk about Tom Herman.
Okay.
I mean, after Maryland, Duck, I mean, we got on that plane, me, you, and the Davis boys, and we're like, it's going to be a long season on the 40 acres. They're not that good. Maryland was not great, but they beat Texas for a second straight year, and we're like, man, I was like, I picked them to go 7-5. We're thinking 6-6, maybe. Look at the teams they have to play.
Right,
and
right.
Here we are in almost mid-January in the Texas Longhorns. Finished the season ranked number 9 in the final AP Top 25 poll. Who would have thunk it?
And deservedly so, even though they had 4 losses. I think it's the first team to do that, to have 4 losses to finish in the top 10.
But they're only one of 2 teams to beat 2 top 5 teams
right.
this season.
When you've beaten Oklahoma and Georgia, and you know, forget OU's comeback, because Texas relaxed, obviously, and they needed the final second field goal.
They punked OU for 3.5 quarters.
They did. I mean, OU fans were leaving, you know, start of the fourth quarter. So let's be real about that. But, yeah, you know, there's two things about that Maryland thing. Maryland wasn't a bad football team. I mean, they didn't go to a bowl game, but
they didn't even have their coach.
They didn't have their coach, but they should have beaten Ohio State. If you watch that Ohio State game.
Oh, the end zone throw?
The two-point conversion
there. Oh, my God.
It was there.
Got to catch it.
It was the bad throw by the quarterback, but he completes that. They beat Ohio State, which finished, what did they finish, third or fourth mm-hmm. in the rankings. So, you know, given how Notre Dame looked, and even how Oklahoma looked, you could make the case now that Ohio State should have been in that playoff because they had the capacity to be that good. So, Maryland wasn't a bad team. The second thing I'd like to say is that Herman was emphatic after that Maryland loss that I feel differently than I did after losing to Maryland my first year. That's what he said, and we all rolled our eyes, of course. But when you go back and examine it, they probably should have beaten Maryland. I mean, they took the lead after just a horrible first quarter.
29-24.
And, you know, then they had that 90-minute rain delay. But they had three final possessions in the fourth quarter where they did nothing. But they were right there in that game. The first year, Tom Herman's first game as Longhorn coach, they bombed.
That was a no-show by
their
defense.
Maryland kicked their butt. But this was different, and Texas could have won and maybe should have won.
And,
but,
Duck, Tom Herman was insistent after that game.
Yes,
this
he was.
Is not, this is different. We're different this year.
Right.
This is not the same Texas team. This is a much better team. We didn't get it done today, but I promise you, we're better
yeah.
than this.
And he was right. And look at their losses. Oklahoma State, they didn't play well, but that game was there for the taking. West Virginia scores late and gets the conversion.
It's a two-point conversion.
You know, and so where they lose two games by, what was it, 4 points?
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma, the second go-around, it was Texas dominated the first half till the end of the second quarter, and then things went awry the second half, but they were in that game with Oklahoma. So you're in the game two. You beat them game one. So, I don't know. I was just thoroughly impressed with the job Texas did this year. They weren't perfect. They won, what, 6 in a row
mm-hmm.
after losing to Maryland. And luckily, next year they don't play Maryland. That's a good thing,
that's
right?
That's a good thing.
So they do play LSU week two here at DKR Texas Memorial Stadium, and that's figures to be a heck of a game.
Well, let's look ahead right quick.
Okay.
They're going to lose 13 seniors off of this team.
Eight on defense. Ooh, that's big.
Including Chris Nelson, P.J. Locke, Charles Amenihue,
Gary Johnson, Anthony Wheeler.
Man.
They lose both cornerbacks, Devontae and Chris Boyd, and P.J. Locke, the nickelback. That's a heck of a lot of rebuilding you got to do. They lose three O-line starters. You lose your starting tight end. You lose your starting tailback.
You lose Trey Watson.
You know, so, and you lose L.J. Humphrey, your best receiver, and as Tom Herman said late in the year, our best player. That's what he called him.
And he didn't even, it didn't blink when he said it.
No, he didn't blink.
He's our best player.
Yeah, and I would argue Sam's probably the best player at this point, but for most of the year, you could make the argument L.J. Humphrey.
He was a money player.
He's coming out. You fault him for coming out early
for
the NFL?
Not at all. Pursue your dreams. You didn't come to college to get a degree. You came to college to further your NFL prospects. And that's what he did. And I'm one of those people that will never fault a kid for leaving.
You can.
You don't grow. A lot of kids in this country don't grow up going, I want to be a college football player.
Right.
No.
Right.
They want to be an NFL player, which means you're going to be a college football player. So, he's leaving. He wants to take care of his family. He's projected to be a mid to late round pick.
Right.
If he makes a team, he's still going to make $500,000 or $600,000 a year, Duck. I think that's almost as much as you make. So I'm all for LJ leaving. I knew in my heart that Colin Johnson was going to come back. I just felt like he's a legacy. He's a kid of privilege. He's a upper middle class kid.
Mm-hmm.
His dad played in the league,
right?
And he's a Longhorn, the son of a Longhorn legend. So.
Right.
I figured he would come back, but LJ, he has a different set of circumstances. Not a poor kid, but a kid that could definitely use this money. I don't blame him for leaving.
I don't blame him either. Here's the question. Had he come back, where would he have improved his draft stock? Because he's not a fast guy. He's not a burner.
Mm-mm.
He's a tough guy. He's physical. He's versatile. He can return kicks. He can play wide out. He can play slot. He can play wildcat.
You know, he reminds me of, Duck? He reminds me of Anquan Boldin, who played many. He was a quarterback in college at one of the Florida schools, I think Florida State, and he became a receiver, and he became one of the best possession receivers, tough guy, yards after the catch, just a good football player. That's who he puts me in the mind of.
The name of that Steelers guy that was a smaller version, not Hines Ward? Antoine Randall L.
Yeah, but he
could do it all, but he's a little guy.
Was a little guy. This guy is a big 6'4", 225
But he was versatile in the same mode of this guy. So I don't know if he'd have gotten any better. You get better because you get stronger.
A little bit
mature,
of polish. A little bit more polish.
But he's not going to get faster, is he?
No, he's not.
So
make your move, kid.
Yeah, I got no problems with him. Now, had he come back, Sam would have loved it. And it would have made a huge impact on next year's team. So I ask you a question. We just went over all their losses. Are they a preseason top 10 team?
That's a good question. I feel better saying top 15, given the guys that they've lost. We didn't even mention Andrew Beck. I mean, how big was he this year?
Yeah.
How big was he this year? I think it's a big loss, and I think that probably top 13, top 14. Their schedule is not going to be easy. If Kyler Murray decides to come back, that's going to – of course, Kyler Murray, if he decides to come back, I think Kyler Murray, he's a sophomore?
No, he's got another year of eligibility.
He'd be a fifth-year senior. He'd be a fifth-year senior, so he can go pro.
Yeah. Yeah. So he got to be there 3 years.
If he decides to play football again, I don't think he's coming back to OU after winning a Heisman.
Yeah,
so
you wonder. I don't think so either.
He won't come back, so – the dynamic in the Big 12 has changed. I think Texas is the clear favorite going in, even though they've got some pieces they need to plug in. The one thing I will say about Todd Orlando is it's not as taxing on you to replace these defensive players, knowing that you're in the Big 12,
mm-hmm.
where teams, you know, the offenses are pretty good, but you know, defense isn't widespread.
Well, I could argue the strength of Texas next year will be Sam Ellinger in the secondary.
Oh, yeah.
You got a lot of young talent. And even though you lost, you know, Devontae and Chris and PJ, you know, you've got BJ Foster back. You got
Caden Stearns
back.
What about Brandon
Jones? You got Anthony
Jones.
Cook back. And
we don't know yet on Brandon
Jones.
We haven't
heard from Brandon Jones. I know he talked in New Orleans that he hadn't made up his mind yet.
A little feisty when they asked him about it.
Yeah. So that's a possibility. But, you know, the strength could really be the secondary as young and athletic, as much playing time as they got. And that's huge in the Big 12. I think Iowa State's going to be a terrific team next year. However, Akeem Butler, their great tall wide receiver, and David Montgomery, the best running back in the league maybe.
They gone.
They left. So that's going to huge impact on the Cyclones next year. But you know, Texas schedule, that, like you said, they've got LSU coming in here week two, I believe it is. And then they've got to go to West Virginia. They've got to go to TCU. Oklahoma's not gonna drop down too far, even though they won't have a Kyler Murray. So I think the bulk of their defense is back at OU. But is that a good thing? Maybe that's not a good thing for OU as bad as they were, like, last in the league. Last in the country in pass defense efficiency.
They can only get better.
I guess, or maybe stay as bad. So, but I'm like you. I think they're a top 15, but I'll predict right now they'll be top 10. When you beat a Georgia like they did, you win 10 games, you win the Sugar Bowl, you got your quarterback back and all that momentum. I think they'll probably be somewhere between 5 and 10.
You know what? Let's put a bow on this college season. Let's hit a couple of quick little hits before we get to Brad Sham.
All right.
Clemson Tigers, Duck. Wow.
Ooh.
Well, I didn't see it coming, bro. I'm going to tell you. The national congrats go out to Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers. Those wet willies were a little disturbing in postgame.
Shows they like their coach.
Was it Wilkins, the big kid?
Wilkins.
It was kind of cool to see him break down crying. I mean,
yeah.
That kind of tells you what it's all about.
That was about the most joyous champion I've seen. I mean, the way they had the whole game, every time they scored, Dabo Swinney's running down the sideline.
High-stepping.
Like 6-year-old kid, you know. He was just joyful. And
I love watching him coach.
I do, too.
He's the anti-Saban.
He
coaches with great joy. Saban is almost pained. Even when I mean, throwing his headset a week before when they're up 21. I mean, come on, Nick. Come on, Nick.
Right.
But here's the thing I'm going to ask you. They throw the pick six. You know,
right.
Tua throws the pick six.
Right.
And he comes right, and Clemson scores, of course. He comes right back and he hits Jerry Jeudy, 63-yard touchdown. I'm eating dinner with my nephew, and I look at him. I go, Alabama's going to beat Clemson like they stole something. I still thought that Alabama was going to figure out a way to be Alabama. And it was had a little blip, and they showed Tua on their side going, oh, that's all me. It's all good.
Yeah.
I was like, they're so arrogant. They know they're going to win right. anyway. Boy, was I in for a surprise.
Hey, I was the same way as you said. I was because they were running the ball, you know, at will against Clemson, big, big chunks. And I was watching at home with my sons, Ryan and Tyler. They both picked Clemson to win. Ryan picked Clemson to win by like 17 or 18 points. And I'm going, come on.
Well, what do we know?
What do we know?
We
obviously
were
not
horrible,
much. And our
horrible.
Bowl picks were bad.
Bowl picks lost to Gabby Munoz and Taylor Goldenstein.
I tell you, we should just let them write columns next week for
That's
us.
That's Taylor asked.
And we should go eat barbecue and let them write columns.
No, they
I'm
did
for
pick,
that.
They picked Notre Dame to win the national championship.
No,
and
well,
they still
okay.
beat us,
okay.
which means it's even worse for us.
That's pretty
They
ugly.
Don't get paid to do this.
But you know what's funny? All right, here's the question. Did Dabo outcoach Nick, or are they just that much better than Alabama?
They were more physical, and I think that
they
threw a wrinkle at Tua that he hadn't seen. They played a little bit more zone, and they made him read some defenses and took away his first read.
Well, here's the other thing, too. It kind of shows you how the game has changed. It's not a running game anymore. Clemson didn't run the ball all that well. Etienne did well and scored touchdowns, but they did that through the air. And those receivers, I mean, T. Higgins and Justin Ross, oh, my goodness, a freshman and a sophomore.
He made two highlight reel catches within 5 minutes of one another.
And they did it against Notre Dame in the Cotton Bowl where I was at.
I got to ask you this.
Yeah.
Why is it so great when you see those receivers making those plays in SEC games? But if you see a Big 12 receiver make a play like that, oh, man, the defense in the Big 12
right.
sucks.
Nobody
Why does
defense.
The narrative change because it's the Big 12? Guess what?
Yeah.
This is football in general has gone offensive. And
yes.
so just because that there are more good quarterbacks in the Big 12
right.
lighting it up doesn't mean the Big 12 is a bad conference. Didn't the Big 12 go 3-1 against the SEC in bowl matchups?
Yes, they did.
There you go. There
and,
you go.
And, boy, Trevor Lawrence. I'd like to be his agent.
Wow. It's a travesty that he's got to play.
Wow.
Good for college football. Good
yeah.
for college football.
Right.
But you're telling me that kid, you know who he is? He's Zion Williamson.
Yeah, for Duke.
And Zion Williamson knows he's going to be cashing NBA checks next
right.
year.
Right.
This kid's got to go back to school 2 more years.
2 more years.
That's not fair to him that he's already NFL ready. Already projected in some stories I've written as the number one overall
oh,
pick
yeah.
if he was eligible, Doug.
Definitely. Hell, Mel Kiper Jr. said that. He's super elite and he's a clear-cut number one player in the draft if he was eligible. Here's the question. Okay, say they change the rules tomorrow. Anybody can come out after their first year of college.
Mm-hmm.
What's the downside to that? Is it because it wouldn't be a downside for Trevor Lawrence so much because he's going to be a star, I think, at the next level. I think you agree. But would there be like 30 players that would declare for the NFL and 20 of them have no business? And would those the ones be harmed because maybe they wouldn't even get drafted and then they're done?
That can happen. That can happen because you look at the juniors who actually have to submit paperwork to the NFL Advisory Committee. Texas had, what, 7 guys that were told?
Well, they don't have to, but
no,
they
no,
did.
But they do. And Texas, didn't Texas have 7 guys all told to go back to school?
Yeah.
So do you think
right.
these freshmen are going to, do you think these scouts are going to tell some 19-year-old kid who still hasn't grown in his body but ran for 1,200 yards that, oh, yeah, come on out? No, the scouts know.
Would they tell Trevor Lawrence to go back to school?
He's 6'6", 230 pounds, and can throw the ball 75 yards.
Well, I don't think he's 230. I think he's like 205 or
no, I think
210.
He's, big,
he's
no,
pretty
no, I
skinny.
I think he's 215. I think
so,
he's 215.
He's not 230, though.
No, but he's ready.
And they would probably say he's ready.
He's ready.
But, you know, I mean, Maurice Claret tried that and sued the NFL and lost. And, you know, once he sued the NFL, I thought, okay, here it's going to come tumbling down or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying I'd like to see it, but maybe there should be a compromise, a happy medium. I have to be in college 2 years. or something. Because, you know,
I kind of like that rule that Earl Thomas was able to exercise. He was a third-year sophomore. He redshirted and played two seasons.
Right.
I like that, but I just think, man.
JerMichael Finley left that guy, a couple years
That guy is so good already.
He's so good.
And I just know he could probably start for half the teams in the league now. There are some bad quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
You telling me he's not better than Blake Bortles?
There are a lot of some bad ones. And
I mean, Nathan Peterman.
Yeah. How about Cliff Kingsbury? Goes from being fired at Texas Tech to a head coach in the NFL in a month.
You know what?
In a month, Ed.
I know it's a cliche, Doug, but the NFL is a copycat league.
Oh, yeah.
And they see what Sean McVay's doing. They see what Kyle Shanahan did with at the end of last year with what was Brady's backup. What's his name?
Garoppolo, you mean?
Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah. They won five straight, and then Garoppolo gets hurt in the first game.
Right.
They see that these young guru types or offensive-minded young coaches who are unconventional, and they're wanting to give them these jobs.
Why don't the league hire Mike Leach then?
Because he's crazy. And we love him, but he's crazy. You can't control him.
He is.
But they want these young gurus like the guys we mentioned, and I'm shocked that Cliff Kingsbury was hired as the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. And I'm going to tell you, people are feeling bad about USC. Our friend Bill Plachke of the LA Times wrote a scathing article, or a scathing column on Cliff, called him a con man.
Right.
Guess what? It's the kids that lose out on this.
Sure.
Cliff Kingsbury, USC is going to find another coach, and they'll be fine. But Cliff Kingsbury left some kids that he signed in the lurch. Just like it's happened time and time again. Manny Diaz, same thing.
18 days in Temple.
18 days at
Signs of recruiting class.
Yeah, and so those kids are left holding the bag while millionaires get to pick and choose and break contracts. So he can break a contract, but the kid can't break his commitment, really?
But you and I are in lockstep, and we've both written this, that Miami and Temple both should have released their signing classes if they choose any player who they signed when Mark Richt was still a head coach at Miami, or that Temple signed when Manny Diaz was a head coach. They should be given a waiver to re-sign with whoever they want, because if a coach can leave after 18 days or retire, you know, where's the transparency? Where's the accountability? Where's the fairness in all that?
Because when you start to put money into the equation, that changes the rules for everybody. The kids who actually play for free, you know, I know you get a scholarship, blah, 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 but that scholarship's a mere pittance when you compare it to the money that they're bringing into these schools, the TV money, the radio money, the advertising money.
And it is all about money.
The merchandising money. You're not going to see any Cliff Kingsbury jerseys at the New York Jets, but you're probably going to see some Sam Darnold jerseys. They don't show up to see the coaches. No one's ever seen a Belichick jersey, but you've sold some number 12s in New England. So this is about merchandising. Mm-hmm. It's about money. It's about how much you can make. And if a coach can promise you one thing to a kid 1 week, and then 2 weeks later he's Audi 5000 going to the Big Apple to coach the Jets, I don't blame Cliff Kingsbury. This is America.
Arizona. He's going to Arizona.
I mean, he's going to Arizona to coach the Cardinals. Sorry about that.
Right.
I don't blame Cliff for taking a better job.
No, I don't blame him.
That's
but
what
you
Americans
wish
do.
Wish athletes would get a fair deal. That's what we say.
They should be afforded equal treatment.
I saw this interesting breakdown on the bonus incentives for Dabo Sweeney, and it had, you know, winning the ACC, getting to the ACC championship, winning the championship, getting into the CFP, winning a CFP game, winning the national championship, you know, and it had like 250, 250, 100, it added up to $850,000.
So why is he coaching there to begin with?
All right, hold on. And then they had the players' incentive, the money they get for winning the ACC, zero. ACC championship, zero. Getting into the CFP, zero. It was just so pronounced. It was beautiful.
And it's what it's all about. Free labor, making men who, I mean, Dabo Sweeney hasn't made a tackle or thrown a touchdown pass.
Right.
But he and the AD and the school, the athletic department, are reaping the rewards that come off the backs.
And there's some people, Dabo might be one of them, that feel badly about that the players don't get more. So that said, you know, we don't need to argue about paying them or not paying them because of Title IX and how you'd have to pay all the athletes. But do as much as you can to empower the athlete. Let them leave, transfer anywhere they want one time and not have to sit out a year. That's the least they can do. A coach takes another job, that signing class should be able to transfer to another school and not lose a year of eligibility. At least do the bare minimum for these players.
You know what? And let them be kids. These kids, a lot of these kids don't have movie money.
Sure.
I mean, they pay their little rent or whatever.
And now they get unlimited snacks, so.
Unlimited
snacks. You get
snacks.
All the Doritos and pizza you want now.
And meanwhile, coaches are eating steak and lobster.
Yes, they are.
Because that's, you know, and I don't fault these coaches. They work hard and they do what they do. But they wouldn't have jobs if not for these players.
Yeah. Hey, it's good to be back in the studio here. Happy New Year to you.
Well, yeah, you too,
you know,
sir.
We haven't been in the studio here in a month, so it's kind of good to be back. Hopefully we get to see some good basketball at some point.
Oh, my God.
In January or February.
Do we want to talk, Shaka?
Probably not.
You don't want
to? Maybe we should do that next time.
Let's do that next time.
Next week, they will have played Texas Tech at home and Kansas on the road. So
we'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, we'll get back to you next Thursday.
Well, let's get to our guest.
Let's do that.
On Second Thought.
Joining us via phone in the dungeon, the voice of the Dallas Cowboys and friend of the podcast, Brad Cham. The Cowboys will be playing at the Los Angeles Rams Saturday night, and he's bringing it to thousands upon thousands of fans on the Dallas Cowboys radio network. But Brad, before we get to football, Kirk Bowles has a very important question for you.
Are you ready, Brad?
Certainly always. Yeah, I was born ready, Kirk.
Okay, I need to know if you've been on Jerry Jones' yacht yet.
Well, he hadn't taken ownership of it yet, has he?
Well, I figured you'd be out for a test drive before, you know, kick the tires and everything like that, right? So what do you think of that?
Took me a while to get a helicopter ride. So what do I think of it?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Because it's the Dallas Cowboys, that's why.
He's not using club money. He's using his money. I don't care if he buys a boat or a pink pony. I don't whatever he wants to do.
Well, I'm just wondering if there's going to be...
I got a new sweater last week. Nobody cared about that either.
Hey, that was going to be my second question. How's that sweater look? Is it fitting
oh,
well?
Oh, man. Oh, man. Which is hard to do with me, but yeah, it's good.
Well, I'm wondering if the sale goes through, will he be celebrating a victory over the Rams on the yacht come Saturday night?
I don't think he'll have the yacht by Saturday night, will he? Okay.
He's so literal. You know, he's so literal.
Well, he's a pro.
Words matter.
Enough.
That's why we want the main words from the main man. What kind of chances do you give the Cowboys in L.A.?
Oh, they got a chance. I mean, the Rams are favored for a reason. They had a great year. They've got a tremendous offense and a defensive front that will scare the life out of you. And, you know, it'll be hard. They're healthier. They're rested. But it's not an undoable deal. And I'll just tell you that the Dallas team is, they are ready. They are excited but not nervous. It's like a business trip for them, and I think they'll count themselves well.
You know, Brad, I can't wait to see this matchup of running backs. Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, two of the most dynamic runners in the league. Now, the last time the Cowboys played the Rams, Todd Gurley gave them 215 yards of total offense, and they just didn't have an answer for him. Where has that defense grown the most, and what gives you confidence that DeMarcus Lawrence and those hot boys are going to be able to corral Todd Gurley?
Well, the game you're talking about, Sed, was in the first month of the 2017 season.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about six lifetimes ago. And this is the 2018 team is different than the 2017 team. And the January 2019 version of the 2018 team is different than the September 2018 version. This team has really matured. They have done a lot of growing up. I don't think they've come all the way. But, Chris Richard has added a lot to the group. They didn't have the same Jalen Smith a year ago. They didn't have Leighton Vander Esch at all. And they didn't have Antoine Woods. And, they're just a different team.
Randy Gregory is showing up.
Randy Gregory is showing up. So, they're a good defensive team. I'm not saying they're the 85 Bears or the Doomsday defense or any of that. But they're pretty darn good. And they expect to do well. That's the important. They won't be a surprise to them if they're able to do well.
And you talked about being a lifetime ago, the Rams and the Chiefs were just the hottest sensations first half of the year in the NFL. The Rams seem to have lost their mojo down the stretch. Their defense has, mostly been Aaron Donald, superstar, and a bunch of guys, and Jared Goff has stumbled a little bit. So, and obviously their run defense, giving up 5.1 yards a game, a carry, hasn't been the best. So does it set up pretty well for the Cowboys this game?
I don't want to sound like I think that it's, put up on a tee for them. I think
right.
the whole environment sets up better for them than had they gone to New Orleans. And I think that the Rams are good, and I'll be surprised if they are not really ready to play. You don't think Wade Phillips wants to win this game?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And, Sean McVay,
same thing.
Same family. He's got to live up to his boy genius
right. Reputation.
And, as great a 2 years as they've had, last time I checked, they lost their first playoff game last year to Atlanta. And so they've got a lot on the line, too. But they are the favorites, and they're expected to win. And the Cowboys, in some eyes, are playing with house money now. And I think that some of the Cowboys' strengths, to try to get to what you're talking about, Kirk, I think some of the Cowboys' strengths play to what seemed to be some softer spot. I don't know that I would describe any particular part of the Rams as being a weakness.
Right.
But they seem to play to some of their softer spots. And mostly when the Cowboys have been able to be good, it's because they have dominated. They have, on defense, they have pressed the issue, and they have controlled the tempo, and they've done the same thing on offense, regardless of what the other team wanted to do. And there's 32 teams in the NFL, and 8 of them have a chance to win the Super Bowl, and Dallas is one of them. So once you get to this point, I don't know that anybody is afraid of anything. I will guarantee you, if you had this conversation with people in Indianapolis, they would absolutely tell you they are going in there and beat Kansas City.
Wow.
And so I think that's how the Cowboys feel. The Chiefs are good. The Rams are good. And they're supposed to be good. I don't want to disrespect anyone, but you don't get Mary Harden Baylor at this stage of the NFL playoffs.
Yeah,
so the idea is for you to be good, too.
Yeah, there are no bad teams left.
Make them worry about you.
There are no bad teams left, that's for sure.
And right.
How about Aaron Donald? How disruptive a guy is this? Do you have to put 3 blockers on this guy? I mean, he's tremendous, isn't he?
Oh, you can't put 3 blockers on a defensive tackle.
No, I'm kidding.
He is arguably with, you can make the case, I think, for J.J. Watt, and you can make the case for guys like Luke Kuechly and Bobby Wagner, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple, but he's as good a defensive player as there is in the league.
Yep.
And if he won Defensive Player of the Year, that would not surprise me, and I think it'd be highly justified. So you have to maybe you double team him part of the time, and sometimes maybe you run right at him and don't let him chase you away. And he might get a sack or two. That's all right. It's the whole game. It's not one or two plays. He's a really, really, really good, probably great player. And let's see if they can figure out a way to keep him from winning the game all by himself.
And I'm going to tell you, Brad, I know that there was a kind of a polarizing decision to play Dak Prescott in Week 17, a meaningless game against the New York Giants. But guess what? Stella got her groove back. He played great, hit Cole Beasley at the end to get that touchdown, carried that over into the Seattle game. Where do you think Dak is now as opposed to where he was at the beginning of the year? And is this a quarterback that can get the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm gonna ask, to a Super Bowl?
Well, the answer to that question said is yes. That doesn't mean he'll do it this year, but yeah, he can. And he's getting better. He's in his third year. You know, did you know that in Week 17 in their game with Arizona, Russell Wilson played every snap for Seattle?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I didn't hear a whole bunch of hue and cry about that.
But didn't they need to win to get in?
No.
They were already in?
No. They had to win to assure being the fifth seed instead of the sixth seed if Minnesota had won.
Oh.
But they clinched their playoff spot the week before. So Pete Carroll's a genius, so that's okay that he played Russell Wilson every snap of the game against Arizona, but everybody in Cowboy Nation hates Jason Garrett, so he's an idiot for playing Dak Prescott.
Well,
and,
if Pete,
you know, I think the game helped Dak to play the way he did without Smith, Martin, and Elliott, and for him to kind of produce the team. I think there are just stages in a quarterback's development when you see him kind of emerging and becoming that guy. And I think you saw it against the Giants, and I certainly think you saw it against Seattle. And he'll do it differently than Jared Goff will do it, or some of the other quarterbacks in the league will do it. They don't need him to pass for 400 yards to win the game. They have a different kind of team. But The only thing I know is that if you talk to the men who are in the huddle and the locker room with him, they swear by him. They believe in him. I've been around teams that played with Troy Aikman and Roger Staubach, and I know how those teams reacted to those quarterbacks. And I'm not saying he's Aikman or Staubach, but I am saying that the way that he has people react to him in the huddle in the locker room is the same way that they did to Aikman and Staubach.
You mentioned Pete Carroll, how, you know, nobody criticized him for playing Russell Wilson every snap. You know, he's obviously, you know, been a very good coach. He's won a Super Bowl. Not so good maybe in some goal line decisions or onside kicks. we'll leave that out there. But you mentioned Jason Garrett. How much is this validated who he is and his coaching chops, would you say?
You know, that's a really interesting question, Kirk, because I think it depends on who you ask. There are very few of us, and I count myself in a small minority, who didn't ever really doubt him.
Mm-hmm.
People get bored by hearing about the process. You know what? It works. And people in every walk of life talk about the journey to success being a process. And You can be bored and make fun. I don't mean you, but you can include you if you want. people can be bored and make fun all they want of his saying, you know, what we're trying to do is have our best Wednesday. And that very insistence and attitude that he repeats over and over and over and into which his players have bought is the reason that they are able to beat New Orleans and beat Seattle and approach this game like it was the next step and not bigger than the universe. And he's not without mistakes, but I really believe, and if we went back through years of play-by-plays, I think we could demonstrate it factually, he's gotten a very bad rap on game management. He has, you just tell me when in his however many years it's been, 8.5 years, just tell me the game where his team obviously quit on it.
I don't think he can.
Right, that's right, you can't.
Yeah.
Because they never have. They play hard for him all the time. He knows his team, which is a really important thing. People talked about the fourth down decision in Houston in overtime, and that right. he displayed a lack of guts for not going for it. Not the way they were playing at that time. I saw what he saw, which was an offense that could not get a yard, and that was closer to 2 yards.
Right.
And the way his defense was playing that night, the best chance that he had to win that game was punt the ball away and rely on your defense to get it back. That particular night, it didn't work out. But I would have made the same decision, and I said it on the radio at the time. I thought that was the right thing to do based on the way his team was playing. And now, you know, look at the stats. No one's gone for fourth down but one team more than they have. And he just knows his team. But most importantly, whether you agree with his game calling or his management of it, he understands how to have his team ready to play. They're always ready to play. And I think that so if you ask me, it hasn't changed my opinion of him at all. I think it's very impressive. And I don't know how anybody, including the worst hater, could deny his role in the turnaround from 3-5. You know, he was part of the decision-making process to get Amari Cooper. He was part of the decision-making process, a huge part, to make the offensive line coaching changes, which were almost as important as getting Cooper. And I don't see how you can deny his role in getting them to 7-1 in the second half of the year and having won this game against the Seattle team that a lot of people around the country thought was better than them. Now, the people who are... I really honestly believe this. I think there's a good 30 to 40% of people who would identify as Cowboy fans who were a little sorry to see them win the second half of the year because it meant that he was probably coming back.
They're out there.
Those you always want somebody new and fresh. And you mentioned the play against the Texans. And as you know, Jason got crucified for that. You look at Frank Reich, Indianapolis Colts, who I think maybe should be coach of the year. They started 1-5, and you remember he went for it on fourth and down.
And didn't get it.
And didn't get it and lost the game to Houston, which spurred on the Texans to winning 9 in a row. So, you know, it's like whatever fits the agenda, what you want. So
the Tennessee Titans lost a game to the Chargers in London because Mike Vrabel, who I think is going to be a tremendous head coach,
I do too,
elected to go for a 2-point conversion at the end of regulation instead of kicking an extra point and playing more football. And Belichick does those things.
Sure.
Sometimes things backfire on you. So Garrett did one the other night that I criticized him for on the spot when he went for a 58-yard field goal that Maher missed. I just think that's asking a lot in the middle of a game with the field position you give up.
And that's got Seattle going.
But Maher's also made a 62-yarder. So the guy knows his team. He's got confidence in his players. And the people who are convinced that he is the wrong guy will not be convinced in any way, no matter what happens, that he is the right guy. So, what are you going to do?
Yeah, like you say, these teams play hard for him, and that's all you want. And the Cowboys are playing with a ton of confidence right now, so it's going to be interesting to see. Before we let you go, I'm just curious what your thoughts were on Cliff Kingsbury getting the Arizona Cardinals job after getting fired at Texas Tech a month ago.
When something like that happens, I always presume that somebody knows something I don't.
Said and I always presume that about us, so I didn't know you did that.
I thought you knew everything, Brad.
Yeah, that's why we have you on the
podcast. Yeah, let me give you the long list of people who disabuse you of that notion.
Well, if you're out there in the radio audience, check out Brad Sham, our guy Babe Laufenberg, and my buddy Christy Scales working the sidelines. Dallas Cowboys Radio Network Saturday night, the Dallas Cowboys at the Los Angeles Rams. We need to have you back to talk NFC Championship game. I'm picking Dallas to win this.
Yeah, you know where to find me.
All right, buddy. Hey, if we don't see you on the radio soon, we'll see you on Jerry's yacht, okay?
Yeah, you guys might be there before me.
Thank you, Brad. Thanks. Take care, buddy. Have a good trip. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks, guys.
Always a blessing to have our friend Brad Sham on. He's so fun.
What
and he's
a pro,
just so
too.
Full of it, man.
He's a pro, and he
so
knows
full of knowledge.
Love listening to him.
Love it. Well, hopefully he'll come back. We'll have more to talk about.
So people
have
to listen to us, I hope.
I hope.
We love talking.
Happy New Year to you guys. That'll do it for episode 121 of On Second Thought. Thanks to Brad Sham and for the duck. I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.